Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck and Chad Markwitz here, your host for this weekend show. Thank you all for joining us on this weekend show. We're going to start off by more discussing the market's big picture, talking about a bit of a rotation trade, and also touch on the commodities. On the back half of the show, we're going to switch our focus to the energy sector, more specifically oil and natural gas, which continue to trend downwards, trying to find a bottom or where that bottom might be and where some good entry positions might be for a couple equities. To kick off the show, we're chatting with Mike Larson. Mike is the editor-in-chief at Money Show. He is featured at all the Money Show conferences, and I recommend clicking on the link in the show notes to find out where the next conference is and follow up with Mike to see who the speakers are and hopefully join that conference. Mike, a big theme, I guess, in these markets being that the markets have been melting higher. This last week showed a little weakness for the markets, but broadly, it's been a bit maybe slower the last few weeks and last month, but markets still have a bias to the upside. And we've seen some of the lagging sectors start to maybe play a little catch up. Wondering if you've noticed that as well and what the key themes are that you've seen really over the last month or two within these markets.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Glad you guys had me on the show. You know, it's interesting, this rotational action we're seeing. I mean, first off, let's stipulate that this is the dog days of August. We're in kind of a slow period. Probably half of Wall Street's out in the Hamptons partying it up. So it is, you know, it's you don't want to read too much into what happens at this part of the trading year. August and September, of course, also are historically two of the weakest months, with September being the worst. So, you know, you tend to see some odd action when you have thinner markets overall, and this tends to be a rough patch, historically speaking, during the average calendar year for the U.S. stock market. That being said, you're definitely seeing rotation. I mean, really, since the beginning of August, I kind of jokingly said it was the out of Palantir into Pampers market. And by that, you know, everything that was super red hot, the AI plays, the Palantir technologies, the QQQs, the Metas, and so on, all of those stocks have pulled back, you know, relatively notably, although after being up for quite some time and putting up tons of points. And instead, you've seen money kind of rotating out of that into more defensive things, healthcare, consumer staples. Pampers, of course, is Procter & Gamble. They make that diaper brand, so Procter & Gamble stocks picked up. It's just an example of again, people maybe taking some profits on winners, looking for something a little more defensive. And I think part of that probably stems from a couple of different things. One is concern about the Fed. You know, we're in the situation where, as we're recording this, Jackson Hole Powell's speech is going to be tomorrow on Friday. We'll see what he has to say. He can probably either lay the groundwork for a September cut or push back against Wall Street's kind of big expectation there is going to be a September cut. So that's, you know, that's one thing I think markets are kind of, you know, trying to, you know, suss out if what's going to happen with the Fed. Obviously, there's other turmoil. There's more political pressure from the Trump administration on the Fed. You know, they're now talking about trying to get another Fed governor thrown out for some alleged mortgage related stuff going on. So, you know, that political pressure, interference, whatever you want to call it, on the Fed does sometimes give the market a little reason for pause, kind of bad for equities, and also gives you a little bit of a, you know, bond sell off at the long end of the yield curve. So you're seeing that, you know, that sort of hinder the market a little bit. And then finally, I would say there's questions about consumer strength and AI strength. I mean, one of the reasons Palantir sold off, there was a short seller report that came out and kind of questioned its valuation and some other things. Then, you know, this week we had news that Meta Platforms, which has been throwing, you know, billions and billions of dollars at the AI engineers and AI experts to build out that team, now supposedly, reportedly, they're having a hiring freeze there because it costs so much. You know, that just gives people an excuse to take profits in what's been working really well. And lastly, questions about the U.S. consumer. I mean, Walmart missed earnings expectations for probably the first time. I think it was the first time in 3 years. Target's numbers were relatively lousy. I mean, Target's faced other challenges, so that's somewhat company specific. But even some of the other retail reports that we got, they just weren't all that inspiring or exciting this week. So there is some concern about, you know, what does that say about the U.S. labor market? What does it say about consumer spending? People are a little concerned about that. So those are the things that are behind some of the action. Those are the things that have kind of prompted some profit taking. And it's really a question of, you know, how much of it is just thin markets, how much of it is something you really need to be concerned about. And I don't think we'll know the answer to that question until, you know, after Labor Day when desks start filling up again.
Well, that's a great synopsis, Mike, and lots of different areas to dig into there. Just speaking of the look forward to September for the rate cut, yes, we will get more clarity tomorrow when Jerome Powell speaks in Jackson Hole. But in general, the market is pricing in a rate cut. And we have noticed over the last couple of months, ever since the April bottom, that the small caps, the IWM, have started creeping higher again. And so to the point you made at the onset, this rotation, we've been talking about it as the laggard trade for a while. It seems like the last 2 years. But do you think that maybe some of these other laggard sectors are getting the bid simply because they just represent better value than some of the other valuations that are maybe a little more blown out to the upside?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. Let's be honest, you know, if you measure from the April lows to maybe August 1st, I mean, some of the moves in again, not just the Palantirs and Metas of the world, but a lot of companies, a lot of the big tech names and leaders have really been, I mean, they've been putting up gobs of points. So you get to a situation where there's some question about the Fed, there's some question about growth. You know, you're a portfolio manager, you're a big money investor, and you're saying, I got to take something off the table. I'd be stupid not to. So yeah, I think some of that is just, you know, looking for those new winners. I think it's worth noting that rotational action is not bearish overall. I mean, if you're a bull on the stock market, you don't want 10 stocks going up every day and the other 490 in the S&P are, you know, roughly speaking, not doing much of anything or losing ground. So I think that that broadening out that rotation is actually a good thing as long as it doesn't turn into this super heavy rotation into everything defensive. If I, you know, if I turn on my screens in the morning and start seeing Procter & Gamble going up every day, and I see, you know, Clorox going up every day, and I see some of these other defensive type names going up every day, and treasury yields falling, and you know, the SPY going down, then you start to say, geez, is this a pre-recessionary trade versus just rotation? I'm not seeing that. I don't think that's the case. There's not, you know, none of those sort of indicators that I look at are really, you know, pointing to a worrisome action like that. So for now, I'll just call it rotation and say, look, you know, it's a reminder of why you have to own more than just big tech in your portfolio if you're a long-term investor.
Mike, what do you take from some of this weakening, or let's just say broadly worse U.S. data we've seen? Jobs came in, not very good. That was a few weeks ago now. And then inflation last week was ticking stronger than expected, higher. So both kind of going against what the Fed and I think most citizens want.
Yeah, I mean, I would characterize the economic data as squishy. You know, it's not the kind of pre-recessionary type stuff that I think I've seen at past major turning points where you go from sort of a bull to bear market and you really start worrying about growth. It's more, you know, this tariff stuff, again, some people may like it. I personally think it's just causing concerns. It's hurting business confidence. It is helping to keep somewhat upward pressure on inflation. And all else being equal, it's something that keeps the Fed from cutting more deeply. On the other hand, you have things like the big, beautiful bill and tax cuts and regulation cuts that are helping in sectors like financials and so on. So I'd characterize it as sort of a squishy, more mixed bag bundle of economic news and data, as opposed to something that's like, geez, we're really driving ourselves off a cliff here, or geez, I'm seeing a lot of warning signs and yellow flags that tell me I want to get pretty defensive pretty fast. So, I mean, that can change. You know, I'll be watching the same numbers as everybody else, but I don't, you know, the things that I've typically seen or that have worried me at past major inflection points, I'm not seeing it out there right now.
Well, Mike, I think I asked you this last time, but I will just follow up again and let you unpack that point further. There are some people looking at the markets, and when they saw the revival of the meme stocks, or when they saw cryptocurrencies blasting to new highs, or you could argue that the IPO of Bullish, BLSH, when it's such a huge IPA with that ticker and that name, that it could be getting a little frothy, but you're saying it's not like what you saw in 2021. So maybe break down the distinction. While there are some pockets of maybe froth, it's not concerning to you.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right to call some of that out. I mean, I did a podcast with a couple guys, a guy from StockTwits, Blossom, a few others that are sort of in that social media active trader world and you know, follow a lot of what people are saying online and trading tips. And even they said, I mean, that's sort of their bread and butter of who they follow and who they interact with. And even they said towards the end of July, it was getting a little silly, you know, things were getting extended, and some of the smarter people that, you know, the active traders that were on their X spaces and things like that, we're saying this is problematic and it's going to lead to a pullback. So yeah, I think it's fair to say we had some overheating and that's what we're working off here. Again, though, I don't think that the type of nuttiness. I mean, Chamath is out there, I guess, trying to start another SPAC, so maybe I'll eat my words. But I don't, you know, I'm not seeing as many of the things that I saw in 21 that really kind of scared me or told me that we're going to be in trouble back then. So for now, healthy pullback, healthy rotation, the kind of thing you want to see in a bull market that has longer term legs. So, you know, I think that, and frankly, maybe selling off into Powell is a good setup, because almost no matter what he says, you've priced in a little bit of risk. And so if he just delivers a little bit of nice words and happy talk, then maybe we just rip from there.
Yeah, every pullback recently has been a great buying opportunity, but those pullbacks have been so shallow. And you made a comment there, Mike, about potential long-term bullish market. What do you think are some of the best long-term plays for those people that don't want to be trading and trying to readjust on a weekly or monthly basis? Is there anywhere that you see within these markets that you can just put your money and be pretty comfortable with?
Look, I mean, again, those higher dividend type names are great. I mean, you know, in utilities, in some of the safety names, but I wouldn't go overboard. I mean, I do like some of the higher yielding energy type names. That's a good place to be. And, you know, I've been bullish and on the train when it comes to the miners and mining stocks. I don't see any reason to get off that. You know, we've had this consolidation in gold for a few months now. And it's kind of interesting. Some of the people that I follow that know that, you know, that really do kind of bottoms up work in that space are saying this could be, you know, setting the stage. You're sort of correcting in time, not price. This sets the stage for another leg up in gold. So precious metals and equities tied to that, I still love. And you know, I think even financial sectors like that, again, there aren't big credit worries out there, in my opinion, at this point. There aren't big issues or sort of warning signs in the credit markets behind the scenes. So I would still say that sector probably holds some promise here.
Well, Mike, you brought up the precious metals, and you know our audience, a big resource investors, a lot of people in the resource stocks. And I think you made a great point that while gold has been correcting in time, which you'd much prefer over correcting in price, you've still seen a nice move in the gold equities. If you look at GDX, it's been blasting up to 52-week highs, and it's not at all-time highs, but it's definitely blazing a trail higher, even while we've seen a sideways action in the gold price. So how are you looking at something like the gold equities, or we could even throw the silver equities in there, same kind of pattern?
Yeah, I mean, again, you're absolutely right. That's a good point. I think what's happening is you've had people that are kind of getting dragged, kicking and screaming into the space. If they're sort of big money or generalist investors, they haven't been paying enough attention. I forget who shared the Bank of America fund manager survey the other day that showed like 41% of the fund managers polled had zero exposure to gold still. And this is after, you know, one of the biggest couple, you know, year and a half, 2 year bull runs we've had in a long, long time. So I think what's probably happening, again, when you look at sort of the total capitalization of the mining sector and other sectors like energy relative to tech and the S&P overall, I mean, you know, it's hard to, when you're a big money manager, to get exposure to that, because there isn't that much equity and capitalization out there. So when you start getting the Fidelities or whomever of the world buying into that sector because they realize they've been missing out, you see an outsized impact in how the stocks perform. And I think that's what's behind it. I think you're finally seeing more mainstream money, big money, non-sector specialists buy in. So that kind of leads to this, you know, this sort of never ending, I mean, I don't want to even say never ending, but very powerful underlying bid that can send these stocks up day after day, week after week.
On that whole topic, the whole time I've been in this sector, Mike, people have been talking about other money coming into the sector, generalists, just a small amount that could move the sector, investors in crypto or investors in tech stocks. If they come into the sector, boy, oh boy, it would just blast off and re-rate everything. What would you watch for to show that that is happening? Where do they come in? What sort of moves? What sort of equities? What ETFs? How could we tell if truly there is a maybe generational shift coming where other investors who have made money in other sectors finally come into the precious metals?
I mean, I think we're talking about what you'd look for right on the show, right as we're sitting here. I mean, if you look at a company like Newmont, you know, which is obviously one of the biggest names in the space, I mean, the 6 month chart of that stock just shows never ending accumulation, right? I mean, it's had little dips here and there, but it's going up pretty much every week. If you look at GDX or some of these, you know, or some of these junior names, I mean, gosh, they've been just marching higher and marching higher in a steady cadence. So I think that is what you would see to indicate, look, the 41% of those people in the Bank of America big fund survey that are sitting there without no gold exposure, and their investors are starting to call them up and say, what are you thinking, man? What are you missing out on? This is what you'd see. So I think that the action that's out there right now kind of tells you or kind of hints at, yes, that is what's happening.
Mike, when we broaden out the commodity sector to look at other things like oil and gas or copper or even some of the other base metals, while there's been some constructive moves in copper, there's been some tariff tantrums there too, excitement on the front end and then disappointment on the back end of some of the tariffs. But in general, when you look at the commodity sector as a group, some of it is not as robust as the precious metals. The precious metals holding a unique spot in that they're kind of a hedge against financial chaos and geopolitical chaos. So maybe getting an extra bid from that, as well as a central bank bid in gold. But when you look at something like copper or oil or gas, maybe not as robust. So does that worry you at all about maybe an indicator of how the economy is doing?
I think you're right to point it out that when generalists just say, oh, commodities are going up, it's like, well, no, it's more nuanced than that. Like you said, energy stocks haven't been doing much for months. Copper has been buffeted, but first the big surge, then the big drop in the futures because of the tariff stuff. And yeah, those are economically sensitive parts of the commodities market, whereas obviously precious metals are more, tied, especially gold, to that sort of safety, currency protection, wealth protection bid. It doesn't mean per se, it doesn't mean that you can't find bargains in those other sectors. But yeah, if you're looking to trade momentum and shorter term gains, you're going to have more fun and more results in a sector like gold and gold mining. If you're looking for value and where can you find decent yields, good valuations, and potential kicker if the economy does sort of pick back up, then you look at something like energy. It really just depends on your style. I don't, I'm not in the camp that says, oh, oil's going to $40 and, copper is going to get cut in half because of a big global recession or anything like that. But I do tend to shade my enthusiasm more towards the precious metal side of the equation because I think that that has more fundamental factors really arguing for higher prices at this time and probably for the foreseeable future.
Mike, let's just quickly touch on copper. I do want to get more into the energy sector, but copper, the last time we chatted was tail end of July before the tariff, I guess, clarity came down and copper, in a way, kind of re-rated just a bit lower, dollar lower, more so than where it was from, again, that tariff pop and the general uptrend that it's in. What's your thought on copper now, more trading around the 440, 450 level?
I think, the short-term shenanigans that happen that were tied to the difference or differentials in copper pricing and various global markets and how the tariffs are going to impact that and so on and so forth. You kind of have to just ignore, maybe lop out the if you could take your charts, your charting tool, and just cut out 3 weeks of trading activity and just look at the longer term picture, I think you'd still be pretty bullish. And I think at these levels, copper's got a lot going for it in terms of grid investment, in terms of energy demand, even EVs and some of the demand for that longer term. So I think that copper is probably another solid metal or play in the commodity space that you've worked out the short-term strong hands, weak hands, whatever you want to call it, and the people that are just trying to trade the next pop and drop. And now you're looking at from a long-term standpoint, I still think it's a relatively bullish metal that you can be playing in for, again, a multi-month, multi-year holding period as opposed to just a couple of weeks.
Well, let's go from the energy metal over to traditional energy. When you look at oil and nat gas a little more close up, they haven't been rocking and rolling like like we said, like the gold and silver. And actually, they've been in kind of a muted to pullback zone. So when you look at oil and nat gas pulling back, what's your take on the valuation as far as energy companies now? Are they at that more attractive buy the dip spot, or are they in a void for you?
I think it's going to be kind of a longer period of watching paint dry there. I mean, I don't see any huge catalyst for an up surge in energy prices, supply demand picture, what OPEC Plus is doing, what U.S. producers are doing. It doesn't, to me, argue for, geez, we're right on the cusp of a big rip, or we're right on the cusp of a big decline. It's more of a snoozer kind of section within commodities. So if you're going to play in that area, I think you want to focus on some of the higher yielding names, the MLP type stocks, companies that are going to, pay you to wait, basically. And again, because I don't think it's going to be a situation where we're going to wake up and oil is going to be $45 instead of the low 60s or whatever. I think we're kind of in a good home base here. But at the same time, I don't think we're going to wake up and see $90 oil either.
What do you think about so much of the focus for natural gas being on these LNG terminals and how much extra demand, how it could really disrupt the market, albeit we've been hearing about this for well over a year now, but they're starting to come online. Do you see these LNG terminals as really the big growth that a lot of the at least nat gas bulls are pointing to?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great long-term story that I think is probably accurate. I mean, one of our smartest energy speakers, Anas Alhaji from Energy Outlook, whenever we have him on the podcast, tens of thousands of people watch the YouTube video because he's got a global audience. He's very well received at our events, and he knows his stuff inside and out. And I think within the energy sector, he has pointed out that US LNG or demand for US LNG from overseas buyers long-term is definitely going to be a force. That probably argues for that part of the energy market having longer term promise. So yeah, I mean, I think it is. It's not just a story that, is interesting. It's a story that's accurate in my opinion.
Well, Mike, while we're talking energy, let's bring nuclear into the mix here. Earlier, we've seen some from the Trump administration earlier in the year, some executive orders, four different executive orders that dealt with the nuclear power, enrichment of uranium fuels, and even supporting the domestic uranium markets. And we saw a big rip higher in some of the small modular reactor stocks, things like NuScale Power and NANO Nuclear and Oklo just shot up multiple, multifold. And they've cooled their jets a little bit over the last month or two, as has the uranium space. So while there's a lot of fundamentals under the surface positive for nuclear power, the sector has started to correct after a pretty big rip. Any thoughts from any of the guests on the Money Show, or any thoughts on nuclear or uranium?
I'm certainly not a specialist in that kind of subsector of a market overall. So I can't really speak from any personal experience there. I will say, when I talk to people like Sean Broderick, obviously you have him on the show, he knows subsectors like that better than I do. And he still thinks that we've got a pretty good long-term story there. So I think, again, not from my own opinion, because I'm not an expert at all in that part of the commodities market, but from people that I know and listen to that are, still think the long-term story there is positive.
Let's also go to cryptos because Bitcoin made a run to a little over 120,000 and has pulled back since. But a lot of people have noticed Ethereum outperforming. A lot of money has gone into Ethereum, and there have been some of these other coins that always seem to get attention here and there. It's mostly marketing around those things. But the outperformance of Ethereum compared to Bitcoin and Bitcoin's recent breakout, what do you take from that?
I think from what I do know and from people I listen to, Ethereum has better sort of use case or potential and a lot more things being done that could ultimately help drive demand for that particular cryptocurrency higher and prices up over time. So, if I have to invest in the crypto space or a cryptocurrency that probably has more upside potential than others that are more mainstream like Bitcoin, I mean, Ethereum's still mainstream, don't get me wrong, but I think yes, I would. It's almost like I kind of look at it as almost like gold and silver. There are times when you think that the gold silver ratio and silver lagging when gold's up, that the momentum is going to shift and the profit potential is higher in silver vis-a-vis gold. I would tend to say you're looking at a similar case between like Bitcoin and Ethereum. I don't think either of them are going to go into a bear market, but I do think in this phase, if you're looking to profit in something, you're probably going to get more momentum and more juice out of Ethereum than Bitcoin.
That's a pretty good analogy, the gold silver versus the Bitcoin Ethereum analogy there. Well, we've talked about cryptocurrencies and we've talked about gold as an uncurrency. What about the US dollar? That brings us full circle back to the beginning of the discussion about looking forward to the rate cuts in September, Jerome Powell's speech in Jackson Hole. What do you think happens to the greenback moving forward?
Look, I don't think anything that the Trump administration is doing is bullish for the dollar. I think it's the exact opposite. I don't think that the interest rate outlook is necessarily really bullish for the dollar. It tends to be neutral to bearish. I think that, from a just sort of long-term, store of value and money flow kind of perspective, you're going to continue to see money flow out of the dollar. What we've done from a fiscal, monetary, and pure politics side of things, everything we're doing is ultimately not positive for the dollar, in my opinion. So, you get a case like right now where the dollar is just stabilizing after a big sell-off. It's been bottomed out in late July, and here we are up a little bit, 98 and change in the dollar index. From a trading perspective, you might test 100 on an upside move on a counter trend bounce. But longer term, I don't see a lot of reason to be long the dollar. I see plenty of reasons to be short it, or at least long things that tend to do well when the dollar is declining. meaning commodities, meaning gold, meaning foreign stocks relative to US equities. I think that part of the market, this equity market's been ignored and undervalued for a long time. So you're going to correct that. So yeah, the dollar to me just, there's not a lot I like about it. Let's put it that way.
So, Mike, I guess just to sum it all up, you're seeing a lot of bull markets out there. Fair enough. Would you say, though, that this is a good time to be well diversified? It almost sounds like you would recommend staying away from some of those high-flying tech stocks, or at least limiting your exposure to those and spreading your money out to a whole lot of these other international markets, commodities, and sectors that have lagged these tech stocks.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair assessment there. I mean, I think, you know, for every new incremental dollar that you're putting to work in the markets, you should be, in my opinion, putting more of it to work in other sectors and things like financials, industrials, maybe some yield plays, maybe some commodity plays vis-a-vis tech. I don't think, again, I don't think that tech is going to collapse and fall apart or do anything like it did in 2021 or certainly in 2000 or 2001. But, you know, I think the incremental performance is going to come from other parts of the market. And I think that that's probably a trend that isn't one day, one week, or one month. It's probably multi-quarter to potentially multi-year in the case of maybe foreign stocks versus US.
All right, there we have it. Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Click that link in the show notes to visit the Money Show website, learn about their upcoming conferences. Mike, always great having you on the show. I really find you breath of fresh air looking at these markets broadly, not getting too attached to any of these markets and understanding that there are opportunities in a wide range of markets. You just need to make sure that you're following where the money is flowing, especially in this rotation trade. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back focusing a bit more on the energy sector.
Thanks, Corey. Take care.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.